everyone. Let's welcome back Laura Stevenson and the kids! Get up.
That's Shannon O'Neill, a panelist and guest host of episode number 57 of The Chris Gethard Show, a show which, in the summer of 2012, was broadcasted from the Manhattan Neighborhood Network studio on West 59th Street in Lincoln Square. Chris wasn't there that night, but more on that later. Along with folks from across the country watching online and any New York resident watching on Channel 2 that night, Chris Gethard was tuning in to watch the television debut of Laura Stevenson and her band The Cans. Many are able to point to The Chris Gethard Show as the first time they ever heard Laura Stevenson's music. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably have your own detailed memory of hearing Laura's music for the first time. But to catch anyone else up, Laura Stevenson is a songwriter from Long Island, New York, who spent time playing in Bomb the Music Industry with Jeff Rosenstock before she released her debut album, A Record. The album was released digitally in 2008, first on Jeff's donation-based label, Quote Unquote, and then A Record was released on vinyl by Asian Men Records in April of 2010. By then, Laura had already done a run of U.S. tours, playing with a makeshift backing band and writing the songs that would make up her second record, Sit Resist, which was released by Don Giovanni Records on April 26, 2011. Sit Resist has been remastered at Abbey Road Studios as part of a deluxe reissue treatment with a special edition double LP to be released on September 4th, 2020. Life's Work is a podcast about Sit Resist, a podcast that looks back on the path of forward motion which brought Laura Stevenson's music from Long Island to Brooklyn to Manhattan and beyond. Throughout the podcast, we'll hear from Laura, her partner and bass player Mike Campbell, Jeff Rosenstock, and more of the musicians and listeners who were swept up in Laura's songs. I'm Tim Christopher, better yet, and this is Life's Work, a podcast about Laura Stevenson's Sit Resist. When she titled her first album A Record, Laura Stevenson wasn't just offering a cute pun. It was a title that acknowledged her own introduction to a do-it-yourself ethos, as she told me back in 2016.
Mike definitely talked me into it.
Uh-huh.
I was like sharing songs with him because, like, I don't know. I was just like, I have all these crazy feel. Like, he's the first person I've ever like been in love with.
Yeah.
Like, I was like writing songs about him and like sharing them with him and like sharing songs like before him with him.
Yeah,
that, like,
yeah,
I was
yeah.
too scared to show other people because I just like trusted him so much. And so he's like, these songs are like really good. You need to document them.
Yeah.
And I was like, they can just exist. You know, I'll just play them. And he was like, no, you should like make a record. And I just thought records were for people that like really wanted to do that as like a thing would do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was just like, just do it.
By Mike, she means Mike Campbell, who helped Laura produce the record with their friend Bryce Hackford. Here are Laura and Mike talking about making a record.
And it was also done very piecemeal, right? I mean, like,
yeah, there was no like vision.
Right.
I think that it was just like, once there were like eight songs and then it was just like, I guess we're done. Like, it wasn't like, I didn't think about like the track list or like really what was going to go on it. I think that we just like got the eight songs and then that was it. And I mean, like, eight is like being generous because there was one song that's like 10 seconds long.
A record was released on Jeff Rosenstock's digital donation-based record label, Quote Unquote. In 2008, the internet was post-Napster, but pre-streaming. Quote Unquote started hosting records for Pay What You Want, before Radiohead's Big and Rainbow's experiment, and before Bandcamp replaced MySpace as the landing page for any musician who didn't want to shell out for a website. Quote Unquote helped introduce Laura's music to fans who were eager for anything that came from Jeff and the community his music was building.
I don't know, and people like seemed to like it because Jeff put it up on his label, Quote Unquote.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people were like eating it up. Like, his fans were like, oh, you like this? So, like, let me give it a chance.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, his fans liked it.
Laura and Mike did a few runs of U.S. tours with Bomb the Music Industry, which were, well, they can tell us.
That tour was crazy. Rush, 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 when cold and when water fast. There were so many of us in the van. I can't even. It was kind of chaos, but in a beautiful way.
It was all our best friends all in one van together.
Man, I thought I was a fucking genius.
Hey kids, it's Jeff Rosenstock.
All right, so two of our bands will tour together, but we'll be in the same van. And then we'll get two guarantees, so we'll get double the money, and we're only using one van's worth of gas. Let's do it. And everyone's like, yeah. So we had, you know, all of Bomb the Music Industry, all Laura's band.
And you'd sleep, like, with your feet pointed towards the front of the van in case, like, you stopped short, you wouldn't break your neck.
I was just like, I'm dead.
We did a lot of sleeping in Red Lobster parking lots on that tour. Well, we know they won't be open until at least noon, so we could just sleep there.
Nobody's going to
hassle
you.
No one will bother us.
Usually if you just ride around back, then the only people that are showing up early are like people that work there, and they're usually pretty cool. At this point, Bomb was going through their like replacements phase, and we weren't, but I think we were along for the ride.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to keep up, but it's kind of hard to keep up with that.
Yeah, they were like the drunkest band ever. That was kind of like the vibe. We probably pissed off everybody that we, like any club official place that we played at probably was like, okay, never again. Yeah. Oh, man. What a life, huh?
By this time, Laura and Mike were living in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Laura's experiences playing on the road with a backing band began to inform her writing, as a community of friends and musicians alike came together around her new songs.
You know, I'm realizing on this tour, I'm playing with a band backing me, and that was not, you know, like, and it's every night, and sometimes it was Mike Costa playing drums, who played drums for Bond the Music Industry, who's like a wild man. He plays super fucking fast, and it's like so fun and so much energy when you're playing with him. And, you know, I think like I started writing for that experience. You know what I mean? Like I started writing songs for the live band because I was just like immersed in this like energetic bubble of music. And so I realized that I could go a little bit further than just me and a guitar. So yeah, and I was just getting used to playing with all these random weirdos. Like Alex came in to the fold, Alex Billig, who's amazing, and he was playing trumpet, and then he got an accordion, and I was really into Beirut, so the accordion was very prominent. And then like Peter Nadeo came in afterwards, and he was a friend of Alex's from college, and he's just like the best guitar player. And Wenjie Ying, who plays violin, who was also Alex's friend from college. I guess it was a lot of Alex's college friends who also just all lived like within a 2-block radius of Mike's apartment. So like Alex lived super close, Peter lived super close. It was all, they were all just right there in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, which is now like wildly expensive, and I couldn't even imagine even walking down the street there now. It's like,
yeah. And I mean, it was still a time where it was possible to live and pay rent and survive in Brooklyn by, you know, delivering pizza on your bike 4 days a week. Like that was, I mean, that's definitely not possible now. And it was just a lot of folks that it was maybe like phase two of their lives as creative people, you know. Whereas like phase one was like, you're still living with your parents, you have that safety net, and it's a little safer to go out, take risks as, you know, being in a band, taking that seriously. And this was sort of phase two where people are like on their own now and need to figure out, you know, how to make ends meet and making room still for creative projects or playing music. And it felt like there was a lot of people that were all doing that at the same time. And it was definitely like a, definitely strengthened the bond, I feel like, of all of us that were doing that. Where it's just like you could meet after work, after your respective terrible jobs, and just lament that, but then also make plans for something cool that you were going to do together, like later in the year.
We were all just like getting together at Alex's, and I would show them songs, and people would bring ideas, or I would have a part in my head, and then we would work on it together. And it just started, I guess it just organically was like, yeah, we're going to make a record. Like, I don't think anybody like talked about it, but we would record these practices, and then, you know, it just all started to come together in a way where it was just like, yeah, the obvious next step is to make another record. But I never really thought about, you know, I didn't even want to make the first one. So like, not that I didn't want to, but I just like didn't, I just didn't think to. I was just like, whatever, this is like, you know, for a person that doesn't have any goals or aspirations like myself, I just, you don't like look into the future and you're like, that's where I want to go. And these are the steps I need to take to get there. You know what I mean? Like I
very much just live like for the present, just because I like, probably because I was super depressed and didn't really like think about my future, you know, like, but in that way, it was just like everything was happening super organically and didn't need to get pushed in any specific direction. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't think about making Wheel while I was making Sit Resist, because I was just like, whatever, we're just making this right now. You know, like, there was no like saving songs for the next record, because it wasn't a career. It was just like, whatever.
You know? I mean, it felt like, and even from talking with Alex in and around this time, that we knew that Laura's songs were so good that it was this thing that we almost were like, let's do any and everything we can do to make this as serious and take this as seriously as we all should be.
We'll explore all those roads as we go further down the line with this podcast. But first, let's go back to the road we came in on, with Laura and her band on the Chris Gethard Show, and Chris himself outside of New York, watching along.
And do you know that I was actually not there when she played the Chris Gethard Show?
Yes, I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah. Here's a story that I don't think anyone knows, because I bet for a lot of fans of Laura, your dream, she's one of those musicians where you really feel like you could become friends with her, right? And I bet there's a lot of people who are like, I wish I could just be pen pals with Laura Stevenson. So here's my experience. Is every once in a while throughout the run of the Chris Gethard Show, I would book some work. And I always tried to say, is there any way we could do it not on a Wednesday? I got to be in New York for my show. There were times where I'd fly back from a gig and land at 9 p.m. on a Wednesday and run to the studio, you know. And I booked a very, very small part in the reboot of Ghostbusters, the one that had Kristen Wiig and Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon. And it was up in Boston, and I was begging them, can any chance I can get back Wednesday? I'll come back from, I'll take the train down. I'll drive myself. They were like, nope, there's no way. So I had to miss the show. And I mean, it was a small part. It's only on like the special edition DVD. Like, that's how small it was. But I was sitting in my tiny little trailer, and they had us filming all night, and 11 p.m. hit. And I was in the trailer, and it was like I had just wrapped a scene and they were waiting to get me back. So I busted out my phone and I started just watching on my iPhone, just like trying to make sure the show went well. And I am embarrassed to admit, I did not know Laura's work before she played the show. That was a thing. I was always so laser focused on comedy from my entire 20s that I really was just listening to music that I had loved when I was a kid, and then new music, it took forever to kind of seep into my consciousness. And I had heard Laura's name a bunch and was so excited to see what the hubbub was all about. So I was sitting in this tiny little tin box. And when you're like a nothing actor on a movie set, your trailer is not luxurious. It's literally a tin box with a cushion in it and like a sink, maybe. And I'm sitting there watching on my phone and trying to make sure the episode goes well comedically and, you know, really rooting for it. I would get so nervous watching from afar the handful of times I had to. And then Laura came on and just, I could feel through my iPhone that she was taking over that studio. And I knew my audience so intimately, and I knew how they liked to get up and, you know, you could be on camera during the music, dance, move around. And there's times where you could watch it and see, okay, they're on camera. They're not loving this band, but they know they're on camera. So they're, you know, they're doing their part knowing that they're there. But with Laura, it was one of those examples where you could see they were really enchanted, really went somewhere else. And it was beautiful to watch. And I had asked our music bookers if they could pass along her email address. And I sent an email that just said, you know, I'm so sorry I couldn't be there. That was incredible. I was watching our audience love it so much. You blew everyone away. I was watching on an iPhone, and even just through an iPhone, I could tell something really special was happening. So I just thank you for being a part of my show. Again, I'm so sad I couldn't be there. thank you for doing it. Something, you know, obviously I don't remember verbatim what it was all these years later, but something along those lines. And then she wrote back a lovely note. Oh, thank you for having me. Your audience is so nice. I wonder how you built that. And then I wrote back this and that. And it led to the summer in 2012, where I was really, really struggling mentally that summer. And I had been prescribed Adderall, and it was not a good fit for me. And then I started just popping Adderall like jelly beans. I was having one of those summers, you know. I was really a crazy person that summer. And I became pen pals with Laura Stevenson. I had never met her.
I wrote to him and I was like, I'm a big fan and blah, blah, blah. It was a shame to miss you. And then I don't know how it developed into us just like writing to each other like every other day, like long, giant emails about like just serious shit. He was going through some shit and I was going through some shit. And we just like really, it was crazy. And I like worked through a lot of stuff, like writing to him, and we had never met.
I'm dealing with this situation right now. Creatively, I don't know how to handle it and blah, blah, blah. And then she write back and be like, you know, I once ran into a situation with music where some people were running a space and it sounds like a similar thing and this and that. And then even in the lead up to dating my wife, I remember telling her, you know, there's this girl I'm really smitten with. It was Hallie. It was my wife, Hallie, who was the leader of the house band, the singer of the house band on my show. Hallie's so great. And I can tell that there's, you know, some feelings there, but I don't have my shit together. And I really can't figure out how. It's like, I'm feeling like this momentum in my life's a little out of control and I can't kind of wrangle it. I talk about in Career Suicide, I had like fallen off the wagon and done a bunch of Molly and it really fucked my head up bad. And, I'm just not built for drugs, unfortunately, because I, you know, they're pretty fun, but I just can't handle them. I just, God bless the people who know how to control themselves. I can't. And Laura was just giving me all this great advice. And I don't want to speak for her, but you know, she was opening up to me as well. And I'd like to think that we connected. And then she played a space in Brooklyn that's no longer around. If I remember right, it was called Public Assembly. And I went and we actually met in person for the first time after the show. She was like packing up her gear and I remember going up to her and I just was like, how you doing? And she's like, oh, it's good to finally meet you. And I was like, oh yeah, this fucking, and I was all fucked up on Adderall. I remember the first time I was like talking a mile a minute. It really, after that summer, I got together with Hallie. I told her, I remember emailing Laura Stevenson. Oh my God, I'm dating her. And Laura was kind of like quietly a person who carried me through one of the most intense stretches of my adult life where I really had the potential where things were going to get really out of control. And luckily they didn't. But those emails are something I really remember so vividly from that summer. So I kind of got to live the dream of any Laura Stevenson fan, which is like, what if your diary for a summer was effectively written in email form to Laura Stevenson, who then gave you thoughtful, kind commentary on it. And we've been friends ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like he and I come from the same stock, you know, just in terms of like emotionally and personality wise, like we just get each other. And I feel like, we're just support each other's careers. He more so than me has supported me. I tell people about Chris, but he actually like put my song in his special, which was like really cool. It was so cool. That was like one of the cooler things that's ever happened to me. Like going to the premiere and being like, oh my God. And my song was playing on the loudspeakers, like in this big theater. And like, it was crazy.
I mean, that summer of 2012, after Laura played the show and we were emailing, you could just look at my iTunes most played tracks and Master of Art just steadily, like a racehorse. Like you're watching like a racehorse just eclipse every other song, because that one was just really summing up a lot of how I was just feeling very uncertain and out of control that summer. And that song was just giving me something that I really needed. And if you watch Career Suicide, it's not off of Sit Resist, but the song that ends the special is Runner. And the summer that I talk about in the show where I went and you know, stood on a cliff thinking about jumping and fell off the wagon with the Molly and got put on the Adderall. That was the summer where I was closest with Laura. And then she has a song where the chorus is literally, "This summer hurts. This summer hurts." That's just one of those things she can do. But that's just like three words that I don't think anybody else is really going to think of. And they cut right through you. They cut right through you. If you're anybody who's had a summer like that, you're just like, "This summer hurts." And she has a bunch of lines like that and a bunch of moments like that where her lyrics really can make you feel a little less alone. And that's what art is for, right? I think when it's at its best.
Well, the way Chris talks about it is so like humanizing, you know, like you can really empathize with the fact that it just fucking hurts sometimes so bad that you don't know what to do and you can't understand it and you can't, like, you're afraid about how much worse it's gonna get, you know what I mean? And like, I don't know, like, and he can make it beautiful and he can make it funny and human, you know? And I think like that's the thing, like he makes it funny, or like at least you can understand it, and he shows you like the human element of this thing that's just like so much darker than yourself. You know what I mean? And I try to maybe find the beauty in it. So he finds the humor and I try to find the beauty in it.
Chris Gethard's story becoming pen pals and friends with Laura Stevenson is a singular one, but it's no more singular than any of the stories each of us have, where Laura's songs reached out to hold us and carry us through darkness, turned our pain into beauty, and hit us with a sadness so raw it nurtures, and give us a soundtrack for a drive through the dark, the light just ahead, and the wait is just a little longer. Life's Work is a production of Don Giovanni Records and Better Yet. To pre-order the remastered Sit Resist, visit dongiovannirecords.com. For more info on Better Yet, visit betteryetpod.com. Next week on Life's Work.
That was the first pit I was ever in.
Me too, probably.
Less than Jake at the, what was that place that was like really fancy and they closed down like pretty quick?
On Long Island or in the city?
No, on Long Island.
Not Siberia.
No, it was like, I forget the name of it.
I saw MXPX and the Hippos at Siberia.
Sick. With the Hippos, that's good.
I was 14 for sure at that show. Oh.